Every summer, we've had a great success with reading to you letters from kids from camp. And tonight, I'm rushing it a bit, and I'm going to reprise and read some of the great ones from last year. I don't know if you have children of your own that have gone to camp. You know how they can tantalize you and drive you right out of your little mind with those letters home, those short, frightening things. Here are the best of last year, okay? Dear Mom, tomorrow they take off the bandages. Love, Ricky. Dear Daddy, I cried all night, but the pain is much worse this morning. I think I need to have it taken out. Love. Dear Mom, I'm changing my socks every day like you said. I change them with Paul, Jimmy. Dear Mom, yesterday I saw a man milk a cow. Why doesn't the cow holler? Dear Dad, I met a girl who's more fun than my bicycle, Tim. Dear Mom and Dad, one thing is sure, I'll never play with matches again, Timmy. Dear Mom and Dad, I'm all alone. Camp ended a week ago, Buddy. Dear parents, this morning at mail call, I was the only one who didn't get mail. I hope you have not forgotten where you put me, your son, Peter. Dear Mom, now that I'm here, I hope you and Daddy... Oh, this is touching. Now that I'm here, I hope you and Daddy are having all the fun you were talking about having when you didn't know I was awake the night before I left. And Dad, every day I try to swim the lake, but I get so tired after only a little way, they pick me up in a boat. I'll swim that lake if I have to sneak down tonight and do it, love. Dear Mr. and Mrs. Wheeler, you should send your son Robert, who is a very good boy, 18 candy bars at once, signed the Phantom. Dear Mom and Dad, this place is swell. They let us smoke and everything. Lovely. Dear Dad, I never knew beer tastes so bitter. Tony. Dear Mother and Father, last night a bunch of us followed our counselor, and he went to visit his girlfriend, and boy, was he mad when we yelled surprise. Dear Dad, thank you for your card on my birthday with only a dollar in it. Love, Jack. Well, this was from a mother back to the counselor. Dear sir, I was happy to get you a letter telling me how well Alvin is doing at camp, but since I've never heard of Alvin, will you please tell me how my son Marvin is doing? Dear folks, my counselor said if I wet the bed again, they'll have to send me home. See you tomorrow, Warren. Applause doesn't go to my head, you know. It doesn't. Some people let it bother them. Because I'm fully aware that Abraham Lincoln got an ovation the last night in the theater, you know, and I realize... You never know when it's going to be John Wilkes Booth time somewhere. I love to come here to California because, you know, I'm a little kooky, as you may have heard, and this is Mecca. Well, I mean, like, for instance... The town is mostly divided, well, it's mostly the British have taken the town over, you know. There are more British here than in Hong Kong or in London. Why do I mention Hong Kong so much? In London. And the British colony here is divided into two groups. British actors and Jaguar mechanics. And then the tourists, they all run around. The tourists, they run around with sunglasses on. The tourists do. Wondering which one of them is Gregory Peck. I suppose some of you see The Tonight Show with some regularity and you're surprised to see me in person because you watch me in bed through your feet. And you're under the impression that I'm a tall, thin guy with 11 noses. What's the Tonight Show like? Well, it's sometimes it's great fun, and sometimes it's sad, and sometimes it's frightening. It's a traumatic experience to do that show. That's a psychiatric term I learned. A traumatic experience means that I not only have a hole in my head, but when the wind blows, I hear flutes. You know what I do? I do say I get a kick out of it. I shouldn't, I suppose. And that's the preoccupation you people have with cemeteries and funeral parlors. I kid you not, as our glorious leader says, there is actually a sign, and I'm not kidding, here in this town of a cemetery. And you know what the word is? Foreverness. I fully expect to see ones as underneathness. Any Forest Lawn is everyone goes to Forest Lawn sooner or later, I suppose. But to those of you who don't know, Forest Lawn is like a Disneyland for shut-ins. But things have happened to me, exciting things like... when I was a kid, the most exciting thing that ever happened to me was on Saturday nights in a little town in Michigan, I used to go down and watch the A&P truck unload. But now all kinds of things happen. Well, I was very poor as a kid. I came from a poor family. We never had meat at our house. And whenever I would go by a butcher's window, I thought there had been a terrible accident. I never understood. Funniest story I ever heard, and I know two funny, really classic stories that are very clean, but I'll just tell you the one. When I was in England last year, I was invited to Lord Beaverbrook's home for dinner on Sunday night, and that was very embarrassing because I didn't have formal clothes, and they were all dressed, and several lords were there, and one lady, and the rest were rather nice, too, but she was Lady Dunn, was her name, and she leaned across the table, and she said, "They say you're a genius. Say something funny." Well, I was dead, you know, and I tried, and the perspiration broke out, and everybody stopped with the forks and looked at this. I died, and a little Scotch editor of a newspaper, Beaverbrook, broke in and saved it by saying this joke. A Scotchman, his wife was giving birth in a barn, and they had her there, and she was giving birth, and he called the hired man. He says, "Get the torch, that's a fledgling, get the torch, and help me." So the man came with a torch, and the baby was delivered, and they put it away, and there was another sign of labor, and he said, "Get the torch again." So he got the torch again, and the second baby was delivered, and they put it in clothes. And then the hired man said, "Shall I go now?" And the fellow said, "Yes." I said, "I can't do the accent." "Yes, you can go now," he said, "because I think it's the light that's attracting them." I heard another true story today, and they're always the best when it's possible or when they could have happened. But down in Florida, there's a little hotel, four floors high, nice hotel, and a girl used to take a sun bath there every day. And since there was no higher hotels near it, she would take off her bathing suit and be in the nude. And so she was in the nude, and she was lying on her stomach, and she heard someone coming up the steps, and she quick grabbed the towel and put it around her. And the man says, "I wish you wouldn't sunbathe in the nude up here." She says, "Well, you never protested before." He said, "No, but I wish you would do it like you before, in your bathing suit." She says, "Well, why do you care? No one can see." He says, "Madam, you happen to be lying on the skylight of a dining room." Here's a silly story. There's a fella who was a choir master, and he had a little church over by Central Park. And he directed the choir, real sweet little fellow. And then he went through the park on a warm day like this last summer. And some kids, some teenagers, some hoods, they jumped a guy, knocked him down, and beat him up and took his wallet and ran off. And the poor guy laid there, and he finally got up and got to his feet, reached in his pocket, went, now is true. I kid you not. But here are things that have happened before the show. I am not a nervous person, but I get incoherent, and I do dumb things, and I have a nervous reaction. Like, for instance, I do things before. It's like a ritual with me before I go on. I always gargle nutty stuff. I don't need it. And one time, I actually had a green plastic bottle of throat spray, and I went like this. Just before they said, in, here's Jack Parr. Well, you know what it was? It was underarm deodorant. And I puckered for 45 minutes there before I And one night I have a thing with eye drops, always eye drops, you know, in the eye. It was Vicks, nose drops, you can see. You can see what that was like. And not long ago, I have an assistant, little girl named Mitzi Matravers, who handles everything for me, and I was bending over to tie my shoe in the dressing room, and she came through, and I was nearly doorknobbed to death, you see. But these things... Is this too much for you? Let me know if I go too far, you know. No. You know that some people watch our show and they have the picture on and they turn the sound off? It's a nightlight. They use it for a nightlight. After 25 years in show business, I end up as radar to the bathroom. I'll tell you some... I am hot tonight. I'll tell you some true stories. I'll tell you a couple of true stories. First of all, Billy Gray, my friend, came on the show, and this is true, and I introduced him in my dressing room to Joy Bishop, a dear, wonderful man. And you know what Bishop said? It wasn't my line, it was Bishop's. He met Billy Graham, and he says, "Holy Moses." Isn't that great? One time, the most embarrassing moment, I was sitting with Elsa Maxwell, and I said, during a commercial, I said, "Elsa, your stockings are wrinkled." And she says, "I'm not wearing any." So you can see that. I'll tell you one story. Hugh Downs, this is true. He recently, about 2 years ago, had a slight throat problem, like tonsils, a little node. It was nothing serious. And he went in, and they took his tonsils out, part of it out. And then they put him in, like, receiving room, reception room with the anesthetic. And this is absolutely true. A priest, a lovely priest, coming in to give the last rites to someone, got in the wrong room, came into Hugh's room. And Hugh sensed that something was wrong. And he says, "Father, I think it's been a mistake. I'm only here for a little while." And the priest said, "Son, we're all only here." I'd rather have laughs than applause, so don't hold me back now, because I'm really gone. My wife and I, you know, I've been around the world in the last, well, since that joke, I've been around the world, see? And I just have fallen in love with the world. But we were in Italy, and I don't speak Italian, nor does my wife. Well, arrivederci, you know, but that's no way to open a conversation. So we were in Venice, and my wife wanted to buy a couple of cheap dresses just to kind of pad out her wardrobe. So we were in this little alley, street-like, and it'd be two dresses here and two there. But finally she saw a place with about six dresses in the window, beautiful things. And I waited outside looking around, and my darling wife went in, and she was, and I saw this pantomime. She's picking dresses up, and she's saying, "Do you have it in a 10? My wife's a 10. Built, you know, but a 10. And so she says, "Do you have it in a 10? No. And the woman keeps grabbing these dresses back from her. My wife would grab the next one and says, "Do you have this? I like this, but you have it in a 10? No. It turned out, and I realized what was happening. It wasn't a dress shop. My wife was in a dry cleaner's. Yeah, that's it. I'm mad about my wife, and I'll tell you the truth. I always speak well of her because she's a lovely girl, really a lovely girl, to put up with me. She's an amazing woman. But the real reason I'm attracted to her, because she's quite attractive, very attractive, I think you'd think, I'm hooked on this girl. And not physically alone, but don't blab it around. Don't. I'm going to tell you something very personal. She makes, you ready? The greatest chili in the world. I could never leave her because of chili alone. I tell you what happened last night. She did a funny thing. She's very, my wife's She's, my wife's very well adjusted. Anyone who knows her knows it. She's very nice to everyone. My wife likes everybody. Even the columnist. She likes a crazy columnist, my wife. That's the way she is. She's not well. And anyhow, we went to dinner last night, to one of my few appearances at dinner anywhere, and a friend's home, and there was a man there. We went in, and his name was, now let me get the name right, Orv Dreyfus. Mr. Dreyfus turns out to be the president of the New York Times newspaper. And has a lovely wife. And I'm so interested. I mean, when I meet someone, I say, how do you do? How nice to see you. And I have no idea what their name is. You know, a lot of us do that. But not my wife. She really wants to know what their name is. She'll say, how do you do? Your name again? Dreyfus? Oh, how nice. And they call you Orv. What is that for? Orville? For Orville. Oh, like the Wright brothers. Is that so? Like the Wright brothers. Now, I know that's her trick. See, my wife associates names with other things. I mean, she says, Orv, the Wright brothers, I knew that's her bit. So as we're leaving, 3 hours later, I said, good night, Mr. Dreyfus. Nice to have seen you. And my wife said, good night, Wilbur. Isn't that great? Isn't that great? My wife.
I was told to come out here and say something terribly British, that would be the quickest way of making friends with you tonight. And I don't know of anything I could say that would be terribly British other than lords and ladies, dukes and duchesses, misters and mistresses that are here. We're coming to you from the Carlton Tower, which is the largest or the tallest hotel in London and the newest, and it's beautiful. 20 floors, and I have a lovely suite on the 20th floor. It's very, very nice. You can see two sides of London. It's just beautiful. And I want to thank room service for the beautiful and marvelous breakfast they served me at 6:30 this morning, which I didn't order. It's a charming custom that must go. And the house detectives here are different than at home. They're very courteous. Your police that are in the hotel here. If they find a room that suspect, they simply order tea for three and join them in. Hey, you see? You thought I'd be nothing when I first came out, right? I want you all to come up to my room after the show. Just go to the desk. I'm using the name David Niven on this trip. All the time. Unlike America, you put your shoes outside, you see, at night, and they're polished in the morning. And it's rather interesting to us because we don't do that back home, but you can walk down a hall and just about get an idea what's going on by... But I saw one room up there that puzzles me because I can figure out, you know, man and wife, man and wife. And then you little children's shoes. But I saw two pair of women's shoes and next to them was a bowler. And I asked the maid, I said, you know, what is going on? And she said, it doesn't matter whether you win or lose is how you play the game. Which is what they say to everything in here. Then, for instance, in the bridal suite here, it's very British, they have a ping pong table, which is the proper thing, you see. I have a wild thing, I have a patio up there. I don't know, a patio, what would you call it? A balcony, I guess you'd use that term. And there's chairs out there and you can sit, it's lovely. And there is this wild thing. There's a bird's nest up there on the 20th floor, but the birds that build it, they have a hole in the bottom of the nest. And I couldn't figure out what it could be other than that perhaps these two birds were crazy about marriage but didn't care for children. I have no other... As you know, we two nations are the closest nations on Earth, I believe. There's differences, I suppose. And perhaps maybe our little Caroline Kennedy, maybe someday we'll meet your little Prince Charlie. And who knows, someday maybe we'll all be driving on the right side of the road. Don't you ever yell hear, hear, or hip, hip, or something like that? I was hoping to hear that eventually, but I don't know. But it's lovely. I know that perhaps my speech is as strange to me, or to you, as sometimes yours is to me. And it was a wonderful, beloved actor of yours, Wilfred Hyde White, a friend of mine, who said that you prefer your actors to be inaudible, that you don't like to hear them speak clearly. And I don't know whether that's true or not. I was in Berkeley Square today, and there were no nightingales singing but there were several mumbling that I heard. Mumbling, I know. You probably wonder what kind of a show this is. This show is just a show of conversation and has been on for, as I said, 4 years back in the United States. It's a show that sometimes becomes so interesting you forget you're not being entertained. And it's on the air every night from 11:15 until 1 o'clock in the United States. And you wonder why people stay up to see a show like that at that hour. It's really for married people who are only staying together because of the children. Now, here are some true stories. I'll tell you a little bit about our own show. Now, when we're in New York, you know, all the months of the year and being on summer, winter, all the time, people don't get as personal as they do when you're off on a tour. Now, well, this lady kept wiring and phoning from Philadelphia and finally flew to London because she knew we were at the hotel. What that poor dear wanted, I don't know. She just kept, see, there's a lot of people that are lonely. And some of them are maybe ill. And they fly to me, you know, and I have no answer for these people, but they come. Well, this lady flew all the way to England and kept leaving pictures of an elephant in my box, and I never understood it. So anyhow, no matter where we go, if we mention the hotel, we get phone calls all night long. Every lonely person calls, alcoholics call, loaded people call. I've had calls at 4 o'clock in the morning like this. Say, Mr. Parr, how can you find happiness? Well, you see, I have no answer at 4 o'clock in the morning about how to find happiness. Well, anyhow, that's the setup. Now, so I'm not saying that I'm so sought after that I'm a big star. That's not so. But people do call me. I guess it's because I'm so personal when I talk to you this way. It's unlike the big television stars who are impersonal. And so you think that, you know, you want to tell me everything. Well, I can't hear everything that you had to tell me. So I use different names. And when I was here before, I was Gunther Badu. And for 3 weeks, all of my friends and all the people on the show know, and that's how you can get through to me at the hotel. And I use the name this time, Mr. and Mrs. Primrose Magoo. Now, anyone who knows that name, I get on. See, well, that avoids a lot of trouble. Well, anyhow, now I cut to here. And I'm here with my wife, who's now going back to New York, but I'm with my wife. And it's Primrose Magoo. I signed in. The switchboard operators are told, no, Mr. Parr. Well, anyhow. Now, something new they got. In your phone, you don't have to go to the box for messages. If the phone is going blink with a red light, a message. So I called. I never had gotten one like that before. So I said, Mr. Parr, a message for me? And they went, no. I said, my light's going. She says, it must be a mistake. I said, oh, I'm sorry. And the phone calls back and said, Mr. Parr, this is rather indelicate, but is there a Miss Magoo living with you? So it was for my wife. Now, she went back on, Thursday? She went back Tuesday night. Now, I awakened this morning at 9:30. Good, now I'm going to call them. I have unlisted phone numbers, and I never call myself, so I never learn the number. So I get the long distance. I said, I want to speak to... would you please get me the information in Mount Vernon, New York? So I did. I said, now, honey, this is Jack Parr, and I kid you not, and I'm the guy on the television, and I don't have my phone number, and I know it sounds pretty crazy, but would you give me my phone number? She says, that's what they all say. I said, I swear, don't you know my voice, or would you call back and ask for Mr. Parr? Well, then I know that's not going to work, because you have to ask for Mr. Magoo. And so I said... Please, I swear, my wife and baby. She says, how do I know whether you have a wife and baby? I said, give me my number. She wouldn't. I said, well, I admire your, that's what you're supposed to do. And I hang up and I think, I'll call my secretary, my assistant who calls me all the time. She knows my number. So I said, hello, operator, would you connect me with Miss Matravers, please? And the operator says, there's a do not disturb on her phone until 11:30. I said, now, operator, she works for me, and she's sleeping because of me, and you can just jolly well jingle her little line and tell her that the boss is on the phone, Mr. Parr. She says she doesn't work for Mr. Parr. She works for Mr. Magoo, so...
It is said that the English and the Americans are alike in that we never learn language as well. Now, all through Middle Europe and Germany and in the Scandinavian countries and in Italy and in France and in Spain, most of the people, most of them speak two languages, three languages. The Italian speaks French and Spanish. The German will speak one other language, at least English. But the English and the American just do not pick up language as well like the other nations of Europe. This is a cliche that's said about England and America. It's not quite true of England, however, because England, when it had its empire, they did learn and integrate themselves into Asia. They spoke Cantonese in Hong Kong. They spoke Arabic, and when they were in the Arab countries, they spoke Hindi in India. They spoke all of the dialects in South Africa. And in Africa, they spoke the native dialects. So the English is capable of learning language, and does, but he has never learned the European. He has not learned Italian, German, French, Spanish, Scandinavian. He has learned none of those languages, but he is able to converse in other languages. Well, here's the story. In Portugal one day, there was an Englishman, and there, this guy was like I am. When I'm not being understood, because it's my only language, English, I speak more slowly and louder and distinctly and think it's going to just get through his head, see? And this Englishman was at the airport doing it to a Portuguese, and the guy didn't understand him at all. In English, you see. So finally, he tried another high language. And the Portuguese guy went like this. And the Englishman turned and says, I'll be damned, he doesn't speak Swahili either. You know, it's remarkable if you've not made the trip to the United States, because we came here in 6 hours and some odd minutes. And I was talking to an Englishman downstairs, and I said, it's absolutely remarkable this day and age. And you could be in the, for instance, in New York. You could fly to New York in 6 hours. And you know what he said? But why?
I thought you were going to be aloof for a while, and you scared me. Would it help any if I told you my grandfather deserted at Valley Forge? Would that help any? The British are also known for their casualness in face of danger. Your bravery is well known and heralded. And they tell me that this fellow was eating and smoking at the same time. And his wife leaned across the table. She said, my dear, your jacket's on fire. And he said, thanks, my love. Let me know when it gets to my lapels. That was rather a funny one, in case you're in any doubt. Some of you, see, some of you are in doubt, you see, and so I will always cue you in cases. Because I know you don't want to be embarrassed when I'm saying amusing things. But, of course, I've had some trouble with the currency, but I'm much better. I mean, I understand shillings and pounds, that I have. But when you throw in those quids and that bob, that does it, you know. And the thing I can't understand is the half crown when there's no crown. I just don't understand that. The first time I heard the term half a crown, I thought there had been a terrible accident. You know, I was up this morning at 7:30. Really, I was, truly, that's so. And I was up in your park in front of the hotel. It's a Cadogan Square. And I was there, and I was walking around, and there was a guy like Trevor Howard, you know, with the tweeds on and walking the dogs, and he was very nice, and I said, hello, and he said, how are you? And I said, I'm an American, and he said, none of us is perfect. So the rest of the day, I've just said that I was a Southern Canadian. I thought that was good. But it's, of course, you do insist stubbornly to drive on the wrong side of the road. And there's not much, I guess, that can be done about that, because that's the kind of people you are. I know a British fellow who married an American girl, and their kids are teenagers, but they drive down the middle of the road, which I think is a very good solution. You see, I don't do a great deal, but I... actually... I'm not terribly sensitive about it. I've saved my money. And the thing about it is, though, I don't believe you can dislike me because I don't do anything. And you wonder, well, why don't I get out of show business? And the truth is, I can't, because I'm a star. And that's the whole thing. So you'll have a very nice time tonight. And you must remember that in one way or another, we are all related. I'm a descendant of Adam and Eve. And on my mother's side, my father was from Wales. But anyhow, I wanted to know about that. Good evening. Oh, good evening. I've noticed that you English girls' skirts are shorter than we wear them back in the... than we wear them. I haven't since Halloween, they're shorter. The hemline comes just above the knee. Good evening. And that's when they're standing. And when they sit down, it's tally-ho time everywhere. Nobody's been able to hold a monocle in their eye for weeks around here. When you can look around. One girl I saw on the street today, her skirt was so short, she stopped rather quickly and almost choked to death. Now, you get that. Look at them all pulling their skirts down. Well, there goes the fun for the evening. I don't know what to talk about. Umbrellas, that is a good category, I suppose. Everybody has an umbrella. I don't believe... Forgive me, I've said nice things about you, and I mean it. But I don't believe you can walk without an umbrella. And when it rains, I notice that only the American tourists open there. The British go so far as to put their umbrella inside the raincoat if it rains. I saw one chap, he was stumbling and falling, and I said, is something wrong? Could I help you? And he said, no, he'd forgotten his umbrella, and he would get the hang of it in a moment. So I don't want to cause trouble, so I can't. And I love the way you speak. I mean, aluminium. Why don't you say aluminum like the good Lord intended? You thought I was nothing when I came out here, right? And there's still some doubt. We have some distinguished people backstage waiting to come on, and there are distinguished people living here in the Carlton Tower, I am told, and this was given to me at the last moment. Mr. Percy Pembleton, who gained fame in World War II as the British soldier who came down with a sudden case of amnesia in battle and held his own regiment captive until late last week. Check. Sir Geoffrey Twillingham, who has just returned from a hunting trip during which he shot his first boar. They would have been married 35 years ago. And Lord and Lady Worthington, who were celebrating their 75th wedding anniversary. They arrived this morning and spent the rest of the day trying to get out of the car. But anyhow. But there is a story I'd like to tell you. This boy had served maybe like 12 years in Africa. With the British regiment. And he came back and he was once very social and he knew many people around, but he just wasn't out of place and he had lost touch with who everybody was. And he saw a girl look at him and he didn't know whether he knew her or had seen her in a magazine. He just didn't know. And he thought, I hope she doesn't walk over because I don't remember. And she did. And he said, hello. And she said, how are you? And he said, how's your brother? She said, I don't have a brother. He said, well, how's your mother? She said, fine. Your father? Oh, father passed away some time ago. Oh, I'm terribly sorry. How's your sister? And the girl said, fine, still queen.
How hot is hot?
Ooh, baby, I like it raw.
R-A-W.
Ooh, baby, I like it raw.
R-A-W.